Hello.
Can you hear me? Hi.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Third time's a charm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Well, thank you for being my first guest on Sex, Magic, and Dessert, Kayla Tange. Did I do it right? Did I say it right?
Yes.
Thank you. Okay. God, I was like, I don't want to do it again. I don't want to do it again. I so appreciate you being my first guest. We've been trying to launch this podcast for about 6 months now, and I finally did it. So you're the perfect guest.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So you're like the ideal guest.
I'm gonna go in my car because my apartment's really freaking hot.
Oh.
And
yeah.
It's a little bit miserable. So
I totally
give me 1 second.
Okay.
The joy of,
Well, the joy of 103 degree weather.
Yeah, it's fucking stupid.
And the apocalypse came briefly yesterday when it was 107 degrees. It started raining in LA, which never happened. So.
Okay. Yeah.
Totally get it.
Pretty miserable. Oh, God damn it. Get my key. Sorry.
No worries. I'm just going to leave. I'm going to leave all of this in here anyway.
I'm like dying. Are you serious?
No. I'm like,
oh, okay. I was like, I'll try to cut it.
cursing is totally, it's X-rated, so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I ain't doing no, it's sex, magic, and dessert. We're not doing anything PG-13.
Yeah. Okay, cool. It's just like really miserable in my apartment. And like my roommate just came home. So like the only room I can be in is the living room. And I don't want to like her to have to be quiet.
I got it.
You know what I mean?
Totally.
So I'm just going to sit in my car for like 45 minutes or whatever, however long it takes.
Okay. Well, as long as no one has to like break the window to get you out of the car, because are you in the car?
I'm in the car now. In my driveway.
Okay. Awesome. This is an amazing way of doing.
This is what it means to be, a starving LA artist.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah.
What it means.
I have to do interviews in my car. The AC is broken.
Yeah. It's fucking stupid. And then we're going to try to get cute tonight. Like, are we out of our minds?
Well, so, let's not talk about tonight, and let's not talk about the weather unless seriously I have to call the fire department and you are like suffocating in your car, because that might happen. But let's talk about you. Because I sent you, we're going to have this also, some questions published on LAI Creatives Online.
Which I'm going to finish and send.
No worries. But we had an interesting conversation last night, so I want to kind of keep that going and just talk a little bit about, I want to just start from the beginning in a sense and talk a little bit about you and Coco Ono and how Coco Ono kind of came about.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think that would be your, if you call her your, what is it? Alter ego. Is she like an alter ego? Or is she something else?
I just see it. I mean, I call it an alter ego, but I just feel like it's another part of myself. And it's like a character I feel comfortable expressing certain parts of myself, I guess.
Yeah. Do you want to like elaborate a little bit more on like which parts and kind of like that part of yourself seems a little bit more on the more in your face side in that funny like irreverent way.
Yeah, I guess I like to use it to because a lot of my like personal performance art is
really personal, and you know, it's dark and emotional, and you know, it talks a lot about just things I've been through, I guess, and trying to connect what I've been through to what other people have been through, trauma wise, you know. So it's like, you know, it's heavy, and so I kind of I like using Coco Ono to kind of do like the shorter, lighthearted version of talking about things like despair, you know, or longing, or loss, but in like a dark, humorous kind of way, like a dark comedy, you know, talks about real life issues, but kind of makes light out of them, because I think that's like important, just, you know, because people can be reached in like so many, on so many levels, that I feel like the easiest way to reach people is, you know, through laughter, comedy. So I feel like once you kind of entertain them and make them laugh, and then they're kind of receptive to whatever your message is. So it is kind of cool being able to use that character to create connection with people on a real level, but make them laugh, you know?
What's like, what's the usual, like, what's the initial response for those people that like know you as Kayla, know you as a dancer, know you as an artist, as Kayla, and then seeing this other side of you come out, like, what's their initial reaction to it? Especially when you dress up as like, you know, Hunter S. Thompson or Andy Warhol.
Well, it's funny,
like, you know.
Most people know me as that before they know me as Kayla.
Oh, okay.
Which is funny. So it's like trying to be myself and do my own personal art is, it's like they already know that I do kind of performance art, burlesque, is these funny characters. So it's like when I do my personal art, I feel like, you know, they know that side of me for years before they know the personal, like, Kayla.
Okay, so let's reverse the question. How do they? How is it? How do they? What's their initial response when they see Kayla, like the more vulnerable kind of, more raw?
You know, I don't know. I've had people say like that I'm really dark, which I think comes out in burlesque stuff as is. Like, I often do acts where I'm dying on stage, or like, you know, I'm upset about an ended relationship, or, you know, it's like more political, I'm upset with the state of the world. So like, I mean, I feel like people that know me and that were like already kind of know, but, you know, so yeah, I guess when it's like, you know, trying to communicate things in like a really personal way is a lot more difficult for me, because it's one thing to be vulnerable by, you know, taking your clothes off, but then to be vulnerable combined with like, no, really, like, I'm not joking, these are actually like things, you know, have happened or things that I've been through, and then being yourself and doing that is like, that's been a really big challenge, but it's been really cool because I feel like it's kind of deepened a lot of my relationships with people I've met, you know, in bars, at the clubs that I've worked at, or just friends that have known me for years but then didn't really ever know, like, you know, what was going on in my mind, you know, for all these years. So that's kind of cool. I feel like it's like opened up like a lot of new dialogue with people that I've known for years, which has been awesome.
Yeah, no, that's really cathartic and healing. I bet on both sides. Do you ever get strangers or fans that kind of come up to you and say like, thank you so much because I went through something similar, and you shed a new light on it, and so I feel like I can start talking about this now.
I have. Yeah, I have. Like, I'm adopted. And, you know, just kind of, like, opening the dialogue about, because I'm working on a film with Luca Fisher, Matthew Condard, about just, it's a very short film about, like, my life as an artist and just, you know, just kind of what it's like to be adopted and just going through various things like that and navigating through life. So, like, when I started trying to, like, put it out there, like, I was reaching out and sending it to a few people that I know, just, like, hey, can I have feedback from this? And it was, like, it was just really interesting because a lot of people are like, I'm adopted, or, oh, here's my story, or, you know, things with, like, the boundaries or confessions performances. Like, yeah, I do feel like it opens up some sort of floodgate to have these, like, deeper, meaningful conversations, which I think is really cool because that's the goal.
Yeah.
You know, that's why we do everything that we do, so we can have these conversations. And, like, I love when that happens, you know. Or even if they don't necessarily connect with my work, but they just see how hard I am working, you know, it's cool to be, like, supported, at least, like, hey, you know what, keep going.
Yeah. And I'm sure in some way it does start chipping away these social stigmas of being, well, you know, like an exotic dancer, a stripper, a performance artist that's not, like, you know, not scared to use the truth and sexuality publicly and expose that. So I feel like in some way it kind of comforts people. It's like makes people feel a little bit better about themselves. Like it's okay.
Yeah.
You know?
It's okay.
So one of the things that we talked about earlier and that I saw this term that you used, which I just absolutely loved because I connect with it myself, is being an emotional voyeur. I think it's a brilliant term. It hits the nail, like, right on the head. And I want to just kind of, like, dive a little bit into that and how, first of all, how you kind of came to that title, in a sense, to, like, you know, kind of just wrap it up in a bow and say, this is, you know, this is kind of what I am. I'm an emotional voyeur. And, your interest behind it. Like how it gets
Who actually came up with that term, I believe, was Luca Fisher, because I was writing a piece for a zine. We made a zine from my first performance, or my first, like, art show performance, called Confession Box, where I sit in a giant plexiglass box with a slit and have people write confessions. And so we did a zine after that performance. We used the photos, and then, like, I basically took all the notes and I arranged them in a way that told a story. And we included these Polaroids in this zine, which were, like, super vulnerable, like, me with no makeup, like, I hadn't slept. And I was just a mess, you know? And I'd never taken photos like that before, that were, I'm usually very, like, fake eyelashes, glam, like, red lipstick, like, you know, lingerie, like, basically, like, this, in this character I created. And so I was just like, hey, can you take some Polaroids of me? And we did it. And I loved them because it was, like, some of them were really bad. Like, I didn't look great, you know? But I was just like, no, this was like a big step for me to be vulnerable like that in photos, where I just was me, you know, at a low point. So basically, we went back and forth with the zine, and I needed to have more information about, like, the motivation behind this project. and the motivation behind the zine. So I was suggested to write, you know, like, why did you even get into confessions? Like, what was your, you know, inspiration? And so finally, like, we went back and forth, and I wrote this piece, and then I think Luca is the one that added the emotional voyeur, and I was like, that's it. And it just, you know, we just use the term now, which I think is pretty great.
It's a, no, it's a great term. It
that
really
was like
encompasses.
A really long, drawn-out explanation of that, but yeah, so basically from that first writing of zine inspiration, it was kind of cool because I had so much anxiety because I hadn't written in a long time, and I especially hadn't written about, you know, personal stories. So I basically just included three personal stories of situations starting from when I was a child that made me realize why I liked being confided in. So it forced me to, like, really figure this out and, like, why I was doing all these things. Because I could explain why I was doing these things, you know, at the strip club, but I needed to find the source of the inspiration. And so that was really cool that I was encouraged to do that.
Yeah. So you've worked at Jumbo's, which is obviously infamous in Los Angeles and probably now around the world because of who's come out of there, you know, like Courtney Love and Diablo Cody and, you know, many, many more. And how you worked there for, has it been 10 years that you've been there?
I have worked at Jumbo's since 2005, off and on.
Wow, yeah, that's crazy.
Like, when I mean off and on, it's like I have left, not permanently, but you know what I mean? Like, I would leave for a couple months and come back or go out of town, come back. And I've worked at probably, like, at least a dozen and a half to two dozen other clubs from LA to Vegas, just all over the place. So it's been kind of interesting. So I didn't start at Jumbo's. I actually started at Fantasy Island, which is a strip club in West LA. That was where I started. And after about, I don't know, a month or two of being there, a friend of mine was like, you have to go to Jumbo's. Like, you have to audition there. And I did, and the rest is history.
Yeah. Really. But do you think that, like when you went into dancing, were you already kind of expressing yourself in other ways, like in other artistic? Because, I mean, obviously, I think dancing and I think stripping, all of that is art. But performance art, like, do you think when you went into it, did performance art kind of come about your experience as a dancer, as a stripper, and those, like, that kind of just being that therapist to the people that go in there and having regulars and all that stuff, or did it influence you to want to, like, create these series of these bodies of work that just tell, like, unapologetic, raw, funny truths?
You know, it's like I've been doing work like this, like with these themes since I was, like, in junior high, like high school. I've been dressing my friends up and taking photos of them, you know, talking about sex. I mean, I was a virgin until I moved to LA, but, like, for some reason, like, I was always around, like, hypersexuality growing up. And, you know, we would get together and take really, you know, sexy photos, even though we were so young and didn't really know what that meant, but, like, we just would craft these personas since, you know, I've been doing this stuff for like 20 years, like,
mm-hmm.
doing these types of photographs or, like, kind of performances or whatever. But I guess when I moved to LA, I was still, I was, like, taking photography classes and, like, doing a lot of self-portraits and stuff like that. But then I didn't, I had gotten into a relationship that didn't really, I guess it just didn't really happen that I, you know, could go out and dance or tap into that part of my personality. So after we broke up, I was 22, and I was like, you know what, this is something that I've always thought about doing, like, I'm just gonna do it, you know, and I've basically been doing it since. And it wasn't until really a couple of years ago, I've always done, like, stripping and burlesque, and, like, I've always worked at, like, variations of these types of bars where if it was burlesque or, like, a real hustling lap dance strip club or jumbos, like, I've worked in all these types of venues, you know? So, which has given me a perspective, a very well-rounded perspective of it, you know? But, yeah, I guess I really started to get more into, like, the performance art aspect when I started doing the Bootleg Bombshells. Or 4.5 years ago, we had our 250th show.
Jesus.
Yeah, on Wednesday. So if you can imagine, I've had a lot of practice. But it's really cool because I not only have, and you can imagine, multiply that many times of me being at Jumbo's, how many times I've actually been on stages entertaining strangers. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, that's like old school Vegas showgirl type of thing.
Yeah. So our Wednesday show, we have had, yeah, our 250th show, which I haven't been there the entire time. I came in like a couple months after they started, and I've missed a couple shows here and there, but I mean, I've mostly been there, you know, every Wednesday for at least the past 4 years, which is crazy to think. So that place, that's what really, like, I was able to, I think, develop a lot of these other types of performances, because something about that bar, the Townhouse in Venice, it's like the layout and, like, the crowd is kind of in this, like, horseshoe fashion, and so, like, we have the stage, but the floor is basically our stage. So, and I always thought that style of performance art is so cool, you know, since, I don't know, like, the 70s, like, these happenings, the 60s, you know, 70s happenings where you see, like, people kind of gathered around in a circle around the performer, and I just thought that was, like, so powerful and intimate, you know, and it was, like, something I always thought about doing, but I guess it just, you know, didn't manifest until the past couple of years.
So with, with burlesque and with stripping, do you have a different emotional kind of connection or, like, mindset when you're on stage or performing?
Like a different mindset compared to, like,
Literally just, like, from the burlesque troupe to the pole in Jumbo's. Like, is there a different, like, is it all the same to you? Or is there, like...
No. Not really, because I feel like, you know, Jumbo's is entertainment, for sure. But it's like we go up more times, so we have more than one shot of just one show. So I feel like, say we go up 5 times, so in 5 times you have 5 shots to, like, show the audience variations on, like, what you're capable of, or, like, different people that, you know, different personas you can be in the different, in the five different times you go up, or, you know, different tricks you can do, or, you know, say we get like a different crowd that comes in, you know, halfway through the night, then you're like, oh, okay, I have to like, I see, like, this is kind of, this is this kind of crowd is like really rowdy, or this crowd just wants to be seduced, or, you know what I mean? As mm-hmm. opposed to like the bootleg bombshells, we just do one act. And so sometimes we do theme shows, but what's cool about that is like, we can do an act based on however we feel that day, you know, or that week, or current events. Whereas
for bootleg, for the one in townhouse?
For bootleg, yeah, but that doesn't always translate at Jumbo's. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you can't necessarily – I mean, you can do it, but it's like, you know, you have 4 minutes to entertain a room full of people that, like, you know – They're there to hang out, but they're also there for a show. But it's like, whereas bootleg bombshells, like, they're there for the show. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, our show is in the middle of the bar. So, like,
right.
Everybody that's coming there is not really, they're there to see what's going on. Like, they've been there since comedy, so they're there to see a show. Whereas sometimes Jumbo's people are there for a show, but sometimes people are there for a bachelor party. You know, and they're not paying attention, or sometimes people just heard of it from Anthony Bourdain and they're just there to check it out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, well, Jumbo's is legendary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
So with bootleg, that's everyone. That's every single Wednesday at Townhouse.
Every single Wednesday.
At what time?
The show starts at midnight.
And it goes till 2?
It goes till like 1.
Okay.
30. Yeah.
I just want to make sure that people know that if they're the ones that are listening, that are going to be listening.
Right.
So in one of your acts, which I think you also you in one of your acts on stage dancing, and then that you put it into confessions, you wear a habit, which a nun's habit, which is, I absolutely love it. And then when I saw you at Jumbo's when I went the other day, you were wearing the habit on stage and with the bananas, which was, I mean, it's just, I love you to death. It's just amazing. But what I really like about it is obviously, you know, in that piece, Confessions, that you are the title, you know, obviously the title itself, and then the content, and then you decide to really kind of kick it up a notch and put a nun's habit on, which is perfect. And I want to know kind of like what your relationship to religion is, if any, and why you chose to like dress it up that way. I mean, to like not and to put it in people's faces,
you know. I like what the symbolism is behind the nun. For a lot of reasons, for, you know, obvious reasons of, like, the purity, you know, the celibacy, this devotion to a higher power. But also, like, I mean, I do like the idea of, you know, the confessions feeling kind of like this religious experience. I mean, there's like so many layers to it, but, you know, also I think like what people don't really know about me is, well, we talked about this the other day, but like that I have taken really long periods of celibacy my own life, but at the same time, having to be this hypersexual being on stage for everyone else. So it's like, to me, like, I feel like the nun habit kind of represents this like almost internal thing that I deal with, and that like this almost inside joke where it's like, yeah, you think this is sexy, but like this is real to me, you know?
Right.
just something.
Right. Yeah. Like that. Like again, that like tongue in cheek kind of wink, wink.
Yeah. Where I feel like I've had to like go through these periods where, you know, I need to clear myself. But at the same time, I have to put on this persona, you know, so I do think it's funny to have this, like, you know, fetish outfit underneath this nun, you know, costume, and then it's, like, you know, revealing this celibate creature, you know, and reveal this sexy lingerie, which is the opposite of, you know, these periods of celibacy that I've gone through where it's like on the outside I have the sexy lingerie, but on the inside I have me for myself, you know? So it's like I don't think I've really talked about that part of it much until the other day when we were talking, you know, for whatever reason, but yeah.
Yeah. No, it's actually really interesting and it makes sense. And again, that's something that I'm sure most people wouldn't even think about. I don't think that most people wouldn't even think about it because, you know, what you do, it's just, I don't think most people would think about it in general.
Yeah.
But do you think that like when you've been in, like, have you noticed when you've been, because since kind of like sexuality and I don't really like calling it the sex industry, but I guess it's kind of part of the sex industry, is part of your everyday life. Do you think that when you've had these bouts of celibacy, has it allowed you to kind of pour a lot more of your creativity into your art, like your performance art, your writing? Like, it does?
Yes, for sure.
Do you feel more focused?
Yeah, definitely.
No, it's important.
Yeah, I have, and that was what I had to do at the time, you know? So, like, I knew it wouldn't be forever, but sometimes, you know, different people have different ways of, like, composing themselves again.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. I know I'm skipping around a little bit, but this just came to mind, but has anybody like with boundaries that you took audience members, you took a like audience members, like real life stories that they wrote down. Am I right?
Yes.
Anonymously. Yeah. And you read them out loud as part of this piece. Have you ever come across someone's, I guess, confession or secret or shame, and has it stopped you and it's like in your tracks? Have you been like, whoa, or like, did it resonate? Has it ever resonated with you in a way that you've never even thought of when you've heard some of these things?
Yeah. I mean, I've had some pretty intense confessions. You know, I accept all of them for what they are. I would say for the boundaries, I think one of the ones, and I actually intro with that is, you know, I ask people to tell me a way in which their boundaries are crossed. And one of them was when I put you before myself, and that one just stuck with me, you know, because I think that's like a pretty key element that, you know, when we put other people before ourselves, boundaries get crossed, you know?
Yes, boundaries definitely get blurred.
Because we're unaware of what our boundaries even are, you know, which is why I love the piece so much. I love continuing to work on this project. I feel like it has grown and it can continue to grow because, especially in the business that I work in, like, you know, there's a lot of shaky boundaries that are would completely be unacceptable in the world outside of this world, you know? But it is kind of interesting because, like, this project has made me realize what my boundaries are, you know? I mean, obviously, I've been thinking about what my boundaries are for a long time, but it's, like, it's funny because, like, as you progress through this, like, you realize more and more that your boundaries change or mm-hmm. that you had boundaries you didn't know you even had or, you know, that you realize.
Or you learn what boundaries are.
Yeah, you're learning what boundaries are, or you realize that you had absolutely no boundaries at all in some areas.
Mm-hmm.
So it is kind of funny because I think a lot of my boundaries, a lot of them are physical boundaries, you know, that's like a given, but like I realized how many emotional boundaries I was lacking, you know, which is something that you don't think about. You're like, obviously boundaries, you're like, oh my God, like I don't want to be touched in that way, you know? So I think it's important to take into consideration, like, yeah, your emotional boundaries, your psychic boundaries, you know, all these types of things that, you know, take our energy from us.
Yeah, no, it is important. I think sometimes that, unless you're a wise one when you're young, I feel like age and experience kind of has a lot to do with finding out what your boundaries are. And I think that, you know, obviously they change and they develop more and more as you grow, but it's really interesting because these are the themes that you choose as your work are, you know, relatable to the human condition. And, anyone with a pulse and some awareness can connect to your art. It really is for everyone. Now, I mean, I'm sure some people in the theme, I know that some people might actually judge it because of what the stereotype or stigma around, you know, the title, aesthetic, whatever, you know.
Right. But the themes, I think, are, like, really important to talk about, you know.
Extremely. It's about humanity.
Yeah, and I just think that you know, we need to talk about these things more, because if we did, then, you know, maybe we would just be a little bit more aware of these things within ourselves and not, you know, let them persist.
We talked about this yesterday, is starting really those, like, open, healthy conversations between, in relationships, where you start looking at the person as a human being rather than the label that you put them or the box or the expectation that you're preconditioned to have. It's just really kind of like breaking all these types of antiquated ways of thought by starting these conversations and, you know, doing it in a way where it's, you know, a beautiful performance piece or a funny performance piece, or, you know, using pop culture references like you do Andy Warhol, but you do Andy Warhol played by David Bowie in the film Basquiat, and you do,
right.
You do like Hunter S. Thompson, and you do Prince, and then you have your food thing. And so you, like, there's just, you know, you have a way of sending a message where it's culturally, like, pop culture reference and culturally relative, so people can immediately connect with it. And then you have another way of sending the messages where these are the themes that we have to struggle with every single day as human beings, that some are being brushed under the rug, and sometimes people have, again, like, shame around them, or they just feel like they still feel like it's inappropriate to talk about. So they have this, like, sheepish way about them, and you're putting it out there, but you're putting it out there so that it's this encompassing all senses, you know, like you can see it, you can smell it, you can, hear it. You use all type of, you know, mediums to
right.
to get these messages out.
I mean,
I think it's very smart.
Thanks. Yeah, I like experimenting, and you know, a lot of it is like I said, like autobiographical. It's things that like I actually went through or observed. So you know, like it's definitely coming from somewhere. So even if it's
yeah.
me chained to a table of food, casually eating. That's me sometimes, you know. How I deal.
You chain yourself to a table so you could eat.
Yeah, that's how I dealt with a lot of things for a long time. It's just, well, you know, at least there's food.
It's not a bad vice to have. I mean, obviously you are extremely
worse
healthy.
I suppose, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, no, 100%. Do people ever come to the club now and be like, "Oh, you're that artist," instead of coming just like knowing that you're a dancer? Like, do you get that now?
You know, somebody that came to the show at Highways came and then saw me at Town Hall and was like, "Oh, wow, I didn't even know you worked here." And that's cool. But that doesn't happen a lot. But, I mean, I think at Jumbo's people, like, know me for doing certain things now, you know. But it's, like, because I do different things in, like, everywhere that I feel like, I don't know. Like, I try to make it so like everything kind of connects, even if they aren't really aware of it. So like I do use same themes like in every place that I do shows, just because even if I separate like my name and Coco Ono, but I still do the same themes, you know. So like
if you were
you know, looking me up or I don't know, whatever, like if you were interested, you'd notice that like, you know, I use a lot of the same props that carry over, or, you know, I do carry over like a lot of the fetish stuff, like through performance art and Jumbos and Town Halls or food things. Like I've done performances where like I did for like the Bloody Gums Collective, the LA is Trying to Kill Me show. I made that title. Yeah, I made a plexiglass, basically like high chair table, like a baby, and like had I had like a bib on, and basically had a table of food and just had people feed me throughout the night. Until I was, like, not feeling very good, so.
Yeah, that's, you definitely put yourself out there. Your balls to the wall when it comes to stuff. That's awesome.
You know, sometimes I feel like, but sometimes I'm like, you know, I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of other performers that definitely take it a lot farther than I do.
There are, and I've seen them, and I know where they perform. But I'll say, but here's the difference. Again, what is interesting, and what works, and why your work is powerful, is because the context and content of your work applies to all of humanity. So yeah, I could go see some serious fetish, you know, suspension and blood and like, you know, get really dark and be like, oh yes, I understand where that's coming from too, because I like that as well. But
right.
Overall, the execution is more for show. It's more shock value. Whereas your work seems to really kind of delve into the psyche and go into like go inward. You're putting your inward outward, and making us the audience go inward to start really kind of thinking about shit differently, or start talking about it.
Right.
So
I like definitely starting that dialogue for sure.
Yeah, no, again, a very important dialogue to have. I want to quickly just talk about, I mean, basically the main subject in all of our lives is, you were talking about, you know, your bouts of celibacy and all these things, but what interests you? And, you know, you were saying that you were, when you were younger, but what interests you about sexuality so much that you won't have to express it, have to express your art in a sexual way? And I don't mean sexual way as in like a, you know, hussy. I mean, in just using that as like the foundation.
I guess I was, you know, because I was adopted, my parents would, you know, have to explain to my sister and I, like, where we came from, and so we were very knowledgeable about, you know, where babies came from and, like, all these things since we were really young, and I don't think that, you know, that had the influence on my work at this now, but I think it was just the more, like, the openness about, like, it was never this, like, taboo thing where it was like, oh, we can't have these conversations until they're, you know, X years old or whatever. So I think it was just always very, like, matter-of-fact kind of subject. But also, you know, when I was 14, my adoptive mother passed away. So that's, like, a crucial time for a woman, you know, to, like, have...
Absolutely. My mom passed away when I was 16.
So I feel like her and her sister passing away within, like, you know, a year of each other, my two, like, female role models had, like, this huge effect on me, and I was, like, really confused about sex, which is why I didn't have sex until I moved to LA, because all my friends were getting pregnant when they were, you know, 15, 16. And so I think I was just really confused as to, like, you know, becoming a woman and, like, what were all these feelings and these things I was going through. I feel like I was, like, a bit of a late bloomer. So instead, I actually... met this amazing group of gay men, and I feel like their, like, effect on my life was just so profound in terms of, like, encouraging me to develop that side of myself. At least at the time, it was just aesthetically, because I wasn't having sex, so I feel like, since I didn't have these, like, female role models in my life, I feel like I developed in this other way, you know, which I totally embrace now. But at the time, it was, like, really difficult for me to grow up and not have somebody to ask that I could, like, ask questions, you know. So instead, I kind of developed the sexual aesthetic side of myself, which... obviously manifested in all these ways that it's happening now. I'm still learning, you know, I'm still learning about my sexuality. So I don't know if that answers the question, but, like, we used to watch
Richard Turn
films and, like, these very, like, hypersexual films. And I don't know, I feel like that just had, like, a huge influence on me. And I used to stay up late at night and watch shows like Real Sex and Sex Bites that talked about, you know, different fetishes. And this is stuff that I watched when I was, you know, 12 or 13. So it's like I feel like in a way.
Oh, you know, I watch Real Sex all the time. I remember it.
Learned through all these other avenues, you know.
Right, but you're in, like in with Real Sex, it's like some of the most kind of you're like, oh, because I watched Real Sex growing up too.
Right.
I'm a little older, but I still watched all of them. But I remember going like, oh, this exists. Oh, this exists. Like, you know, because they really
exactly.
kind of
went
into
so
like.
Because I feel like it's definitely been the foundation of like my, you know, they say like nature versus nurture. I don't know. My mother was so accepting of so many different types of people and walks of life. So maybe it was nurture in that sense. Like, I feel like she passed that onto me in just the way I deal with people. But I feel like watching all these shows at such a young age, you know, whether it was right or wrong for me to watch, but I feel like it's made me more open to be less, you know, be less judgmental about what other people are into, you know, and what's normal. So,
yeah, agreed. Mhm.
So yeah.
I totally agree. I really do. That was a great. Sorry.
So yeah, that was.
Say that again.
That was my education.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, and then so many other like shows kind of sprung out of that one. But yeah, no, it really was a great show. And I do agree. I think it really kind of if you paid attention to it, not to like, you know, get off, but if you paid attention to it just to like see the different types of like human psychology, it does open you up and you're like, eh. Not like it desensitizes you, but it does open you up to be like, oh, there's so many different ways of life. And these people seem relatively normal when talking about their preferences. What's the big deal?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
totally.
Yeah. That's funny. Okay. Well, the last thing I'm going to ask you is I want to know, like, even though it's going to be published, if you want to explain a little bit about the poetry brothel that's coming up.
Oh, the poetry brothel. It's November 2nd, and it's basically, it's like a performance art, poetry, tarot, what else? Did I say? I think there's music. But it's just this really cool, unique event where set up kind of like an old bordello where basically you can buy tokens and you give those tokens to whoever you want to get a poetry reading from. And then they set up this like room that's almost like this private room. And then you give whichever poet or, you know, tarot card reader that your tokens, and then, yeah, you have session with them. I just thought that was so cool. It's really, the way it's set up, it's like really sexy, you know, and people get dressed up and it's like just this really sexy event, but it's also like very intellectual. And I just think that's amazing that this exists.
Yeah, no, it's really cool, and it's November 6th, and do you know and where
November
like
2nd.
The location is? And oh, November
it's
2nd,
November
and what's the location?
2nd, I believe it is at. Sorry. Right, it's the tickets are on Gold Star right now, and it is Next Door Lounge.
And what are you going to be doing exactly there? Like,
I'm going to be a poet.
Oh, how cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm thrilled to be a part of it in any way possible, but I basically was like, you know, I've been writing poetry since I was in junior high, and I just never show it to anybody because it's like, you know, it's personal. And then I was just like, you know what, it's been one of my goals to get over some of these fears. So exciting to me to be able to do that. It's terrifying.
That is super cool. Yeah, no, yeah. I know, totally. Reading your work out loud in front of people is terrifying. I totally get
terrifying.
It.
Terrifying. I know. So I just, like, I'm just, like, really happy to have this experience because I love this event. I just think it's so amazing what they're doing. So, and they do it all over the world.
Yeah, this, you know, it sounds super cool. I'm going to go. I think it's really funny that it's more comfortable, and I'm like this too, I'm more comfortable to take off my clothes and be naked than be in front of people, like, totally clothed and reading something that I've written from the heart.
Something personal, or telling someone how you feel. I can talk
yeah.
about other people's feelings and, you know, till the end of time, forever, and I can get so vulnerable with people, and, you know, I can tell them personal stories about my life, but it's like, then you have to tell someone how you feel, and that's just so terrifying.
It is, and again, in the big picture, it actually is not a small thing. It really does affect, that energy does affect everything. So I think it's what your work is part of that, and it's opening the dialogue up and open that, like, taking away the any kind of toxic shame, taking away any kind of embarrassment, you know, like, just giving people, like, a little bit of, like, a bravery to them and
mm-hmm.
courage, and just be like, let's just do this. Let's get this out in the open. Let's talk about it, because it spreads into other things, into other subjects, into other types of relationships. And then pretty much, you know, hopefully, God willing, maybe not in our time, but, like, eventually people are going to be so honest with each other that there's going to be, like, no misunderstandings.
Yeah.
But that's me being a hippie.
That's true. We can only hope, you know? It's just,
yeah,
I think doing all these things, though, helps me with my own fears. So I feel like if I can do that for myself, then I'm more available to help other people do that as well. So,
yeah. Definitely. And, you know, with so many years as a dancer and dancing in those clubs and working with men and having them tell you, I'm sure, every single thing under the sun and just kind of acting like their therapist, you're definitely, like, you know, very equipped to be doing what you're doing.
It's true.
And,
I love
it's
men.
It's totally true.
I love men. And I love that they trust me and these situations, and, like, I'm honored that, you know, certain people have, you know, decided to share these stories with me. And, you know, anything that makes anybody more compassionate towards anybody, I think is, like, not a bad thing, you know.
100%. No, it's 100% true. Yeah, it's time for a bunch of us to kind of get together and really like, put emphasis on compassion and non-judgment and sex, because if it wasn't for sex, none of us would be here.
Right.
So everybody remember that.
Right. You're like, end record.
Yeah, no, and with that said, I'm out. No, I really appreciate your time, and again, for being my first guest, and you know how much
nice, you know how much to meet like-minded individual. Just, you know.
Yeah. I'm the more that we do this, the more like-minded individuals are going to be coming on, and, like, then we can just have this, like, community center.
Totally.
So thank you again, and I will tell you when I think we're gonna probably simultaneously put out the interview, the paper interview, the written interview on LAI Creatives, and then I will at the same time put this out. So they have both.
Awesome.
Cool. And I'll see you tonight.
I'll see you tonight. Text me the address.
The what?
Of your text me your friend's address.
Oh, I will. I'm gonna. We're gonna hang up on this podcast, and then I'm gonna.
Uh-huh.
I'm gonna call you back.
Okay. Cool.
All right. Thanks
okay,
again.
Bye.
Okay. Bye.
Okay.